Welcome to the Soft Tattooed Millionaires Podcast. I'm your host, Jack, and I'm joined by my brother, Max. Max, the World Cup is here. How are you feeling?
All sorts of feels, I guess. There's so much going on, and just like looking through everything, I've probably listened to so many podcast previews and read so many things, but thinking about it now that it's up close and personal and looking over the groups and kind of trying to figure out like how I think and feel about it and not just digest what other people think and feel about it, I'm overwhelmed. There's just so much to think about, and I think I still don't know like whom I'm really rooting for, and I'm just kind of like in this stage where I'm just reading a bunch and doing a bunch of research and getting more and more excited. How about you?
I've been the last couple of days, I've just been thinking about how every 4 years this happens, and every 4 years it's one of the major events of my life, something that I will always look back on. All the storylines from the other World Cups are still in me, you know. I mean, 3.2 billion people have watched the past two World Cups. That's incredible. That's not just like a sporting event. That is the biggest sort of humankind event.
Absolutely. And I think too, like, as you said, it is just this life event. But I don't know what I'm going to say.
It's okay. I mean, I don't
Let's
really,
just get I, into it because yeah. I feel like there's, I just as we start talking about, there's so much research that I did that like, oh yeah, like finding out more about kind of like what the different countries have been through to get here. It's so compelling. And I think we're so caught up in the American story for good reason that we kind of forget like some of the other roads of qualification that these other countries have been through and where they're at and their players and all that kind of stuff. It's just, it puts a lot of the soccer world in perspective once you start kind of looking at some of these other groups and these kind of mid to lower level teams in the kind of same quality area that the U.S. is at. And it's really, I don't know, it's neat. So trying to figure out whom I'm rooting for is a good exercise in getting me to like kind of sympathize with all these other countries and their development.
Yeah, well, let's start there. Who do you think you'll be rooting for come the World Cup? Obviously, we can't root for the U.S. And we're not going to talk about the France game today, so if that's what you're looking for, go find it everywhere else. But, Max, who do you think you'll root for?
I'm still, like, on the fence. I think that the more I mentioned it before in this podcast, but the more I read about, like, Senegal, yeah, the more I'm, like, really interested in them as a team. And I mean, I just sort of said it that like some of these countries have had like a really hard road to qualification. And Senegal is, I believe, the second World Cup qualified in 2002 when they had something of a golden generation. A bunch of players that are playing for like Liverpool and other places like that. It's one of only three African teams to ever reach the quarterfinals. And then it hasn't qualified since 2002. Basically coming off crisis and mismanagement. There were like riots in the street after failing to qualify in 2010. And they missed qualification in the last rounds in both 2010 and 2014. So they have been through the shit. and now they are qualified. And, you know, so it's sort of like, I think you think about like where we are at as a country, we're at the sort of the low point, so to speak, in our international swing, looking towards the future. And this is a country that's kind of like come out of all of that, out of mismanagement and out of frustration and all that kind of stuff. And it's awesome to see them in the World Cup then.
Yeah, I have an immense amount of love for Senegal, and their nickname is the Lions of Teranga. And Teranga is the Wolof word for hospitality. So the hospitality lions or the Lions of Hospitality. Definitely love that. Would love that on a t-shirt. Their entire midfield is based in the Premier League, so all players that we're familiar with, except for Chikundoy, who plays for Birmingham. So,
I know we're going to talk about disruptors and kind of dark horses and that kind of thing, but yeah, I agree. They're really interesting team. Strong defensive midfield. Idrissa Kanaté. It's going to surprise people. They also have Koulibaly, who's a defender. He's like 6'5", nicknamed The Wall. And so there's going to be, I think they've kind of got this enough defense plus Sadio Mane, which is a good recipe, you know, for tournament football. Like if you've just got a bunch of like stout defenders in the back line and in the middle of the field, and then you've got one guy who can score, that's like a pretty solid recipe for surprising some people.
Yeah, they definitely spread the goals around. What I've been reading about Senegal is just that I think a lot of people are concerned with their ability to have a consistent goal score. I don't think anybody scored more than two in qualifying. So I think a lot of it's going to hinge on Mane and if he can consistently find the back of the net. But let's not spend too much time on one team. You know, so you're going for Senegal, you think?
I think so. I mean, there's that said, like, I love a good story. And so if something kind of happens in the course of this World Cup that you know, like, captivates me, like, let's say Peru mm-hmm. continues its Cinderella run, like, how could you not root for them? Yeah. So I'm all kinds of excited about all kinds of teams. But my initial, like, team that's sort of catching my eye, in a sense, is Senegal.
Great. I think it has to be Mexico. Just, yeah. I mean, it's a purely emotional decision, just based on what Mexican soccer culture has given us growing up and watching Chivas and having worked with, you know, primarily Mexicans for the last decade. Definitely not a soccer decision, but a life decision or a decision from the heart. Love Mexico, a lot of respect for Mexico as a country and Mexican culture in general. So let's go.
How familiar do you think the kind of like standard American soccer fan is with like Mexico's World Cup struggles and the sort of like the national team issues with the Mexican national team?
Not very. I would even I'd say, like, you know, because what I've been talking about, I work with a fair amount of people who I would say are soccer fans, maybe not total nerds like us, and good for them, they have social lives. But
I would say I'm more of a dork than a nerd, because I think I still struggle with my own, like, some amount of soccer incompetence. But yeah, something like that, nerd or dork. But anyway,
regardless, both of us are posers. Anyways, but when we talk about the World Cup, I always say, you know, well, I hope that Mexico gets the fifth game, you know, and they sort of like blankly look at me. So I don't think people are that well versed in Mexico's history in World Cups, but
explain the curse of the fifth game.
But I mean, I don't know. It's like, can something be a curse if it's just like you are head cases and like always perform worse than the sum of your parts, you know?
Yeah.
Where they've never reached the fifth game. So in a World Cup,
I think that's in some way that's like the most crazy thing about the World Cup, is the small number of teams that have won it. The obviously it's only every 4 years, it's not frequent, but and then also things like that stat I quoted earlier, that there have only been three African countries to ever make the quarterfinals, and just like how you realize like how concentrated even though it is the world game, how concentrated the results are for the World Cup, and how much it means to some countries just to make it that next step in the tournament.
This is not my viewpoint. I heard this on a different soccer podcast on the continent, but I really liked it, where there really isn't a history of surprises in the World Cup, right? Like we always say, oh, what's a dark horse? What's going to be the Cinderella story? But then we have to reclassify what a dark horse means and what a Cinderella story is. Like, oh, well, maybe reaching the quarterfinals for a team like Panama is the dark horse, you know? Whereas like a true dark horse gets to the semis, you know, like Wales in the Euro. That's a dark horse.
Yeah, there's no equivalent of like Loyola basketball this year. There's never going to be that team that is somehow like stumbles into the finals and plays just like a man on fire or whatever. And you're like, how did they make it here?
So today on Twitter, I just asked if there was anything in particular that people wanted us to talk about. And we got a response that I really liked. Let me pull it up real quick just so I can get his name out there, because I thought it was is smart, because I think we're all listening to a lot of World Cup guides right now, and they're all more or less the same. But Pat Miller at J Pat Miller asked, can you talk about some players on lower profile teams that are worth watching? And I loved this suggestion so much, because I think that's why I love the World Cup, is that suddenly I'm watching a game of, like, you know, Algeria v Denmark, and I'm like, who are like there'll be like some player who just catches my eye, some bit of skill that I can't stop thinking about. So, you know, without any further ado, I picked seven players to watch on bad teams, and I'll try and get through these quickly if that's all right.
Yeah, I picked a few too, and I'm gonna guess we've got some overlap here, but go ahead.
Great. So then I'll start with what I think are maybe the obvious ones. So Alireza Jahanbakhsh on Iran. I don't know how to say his last name, but I've heard him just called Alireza. He was the top scorer in the Eredivisie last year with 21 goals, also had 12 assists, plays as a winger, attacking mid, two-footed, incredible passing, He has stated that his goal is to play in Germany. So even though Iran has no chance, I think he'll be playing for a move, and he certainly has the technical ability.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Yeah, maybe I should just real quick. Alireza plays for AZ Alkmaar. So just, real quick, I think that's important to know. Anyways, and then another maybe an obvious pick, maybe not, is Daniel Arzani for Australia. Mostly because he's going to be the youngest player at the World Cup. He's only 19. He's originally from Iran, grew up in Australia. He won A-League Young Player of the Year, also named in the Team of the Year. Scored against Hungary either yesterday or a couple of days ago, I can't remember. But watching videos of him on YouTube, it's obvious to see his sort of like futsal past in his ability to get by defenders, and he just, loves to nutmeg folks. Great close control. I think he's 19, he's obviously really talented. Maybe the A-League isn't the hardest competition out there, but if he has a decent enough World Cup, I think, he could be moving on to bigger and better things.
That's cool. Yeah, I think Australia is one of those interesting teams too. They obviously had to play out the tournament, whatever that's called, to get into the World Cup, and they've got a few kind of interesting storylines.
Yeah.
Tim Cahill
Love Tim
is one of
Cahill.
those players who's this is going to be his fourth World Cup.
Yeah, he's 38.
He's 38. He's currently not on a team. He's basically just like Dennis Quaid from The Rookie.
Man.
So he's going to be, anything that he does is just icing on the cake, and kind of the sort of, the guy you think about when you think about Australian soccer. And so, cool stories there with them. They're definitely an interesting team to watch.
Yeah, I go Socceroos. The third person is Hakim Ziyech. He's on Morocco. Right now, there's a lot of transfer talk around him because apparently Liverpool want to sign him, but they sort of have yet to be convinced. At the moment, Hakim plays for Ajax, led the Eredivisie in assists 3 of the past 4 years, Dutch Player of the Year, Ajax Player of the Year. It's been reported that Roma have reached an agreement for him, but don't want to pay 45 million euros. So he's a huge talent. He's 25 years old. He's about to peak in his career. I think Morocco are better than people give them credit for. So.
Yeah, you mentioned you had a couple of people from Morocco, and I also have a couple of people from Morocco. So another one, very similar story, is Amin Harit,
Yeah, I have them
who's
too.
he's 20 years old, plays for Schalke. He's a really dynamic attacking midfield type, and so he's a guy that like he's when I've seen him play in Schalke, when I've been watching Weston McKennie and that kind of thing, it's you just been like, oh. That guy, he keeps doing stuff that looks really good. And so I
Yeah.
think he's gonna have some moments like that in the World Cup where he surprises people. And again, being only 20 years old, that's like the perfect kind of time to capture the soccer imagination.
Yeah. I'm all about it. Do you have who's your other Moroccan?
Achraf Hakimi, who is
Okay.
19-year-old, backing up Carvajal at Real Madrid. And so
Crazy.
he's a pretty good guy. And so it'd be just he's also in that kind of position, I think, where at 19 years old, right back, like depending on kind of like what he does in the tournament, could kind of like direct get more attention, direct his sort of like future, that kind of thing. So obviously pretty good. Yeah, I mean, we've named like three players playing for really good teams, obviously,
Yeah.
from Morocco, who are all really young. And so that just it goes to show that like Morocco is one of these clubs where there's a lot of surprising talent there.
Yeah,
Or I shouldn't
one.
say surprising, but because they're a good soccer country, but still like more than people realize, and a lot of young, exciting talent.
Yeah, I'm like after doing our sort of Wikipedia holes today, I am so excited to watch Morocco.
Yeah.
Another country that, I mentioned one Iranian already, and then I have another Iranian, Sardar Azmoun, who has scored 23 goals in 33 games for Iran. He's 23 years old. In the past, he's attracted interest from Arsenal, Liverpool, Marseille, and Celtic, but he sort of seems to be in sort of like transfer limbo, where like his parent club refuses to sell him. Other clubs claim they've already bought him. Seems really weird. So plays in the Russian league, so I don't really know what's going on there, but YouTube are YouTubing him today. He seems like fast, physical, and just sort of open to trying crazy shit on the field in a way that's similar to Andrew Carlton, you know, where like if he sees an opening, he's gonna try, like, even if he has to like lob it over a couple lines of defenders and just Hail Mary it, he's gonna give it a whirl. So that's the kind, like, definitely someone who loves to have, like, he looks like he's having fun. So definitely someone to watch. Sardar Azmoun.
That's another just great point about kind of the watchability of the World Cup and the, mm-hmm. and the kinds of players and teams that capture your attention are the ones where they have some just kind of like some fun going on. And when you're unattached and you're watching a game that doesn't feature your home country, you just kind of watch it from this very like pure place of just like whom you can like and, you know, like the style of the game and just kind of like falling in love in a sense with some of these players. So yeah. Like the fun factor is going to be huge, and I think that's why, both because like that's part of the reason why I think we're choosing all these kind of like young, exciting players who mm-hmm. the potential is there, and we don't really know how good they're going to be. Just for, I think they're going to capture our attention, but also, I mean, naturally, because those are the kind of guys who are going to spark a lot of transfer interest after the World Cup too.
Yeah. Do you have other players? I have one more, but I don't know if you have another young player.
Yeah, Wilfred Ndidi. Plays for Leicester. He's Nigerian, 21 years old, strong tackling midfielder. And I think that one of the reasons to keep an eye on someone like him is that, like, you're going to be watching, you know, like Nigeria play another team, then you're just going to watch like some superstar get blown up by Ndidi, and you'll be like, man, who is that? Oh, it's Ndidi again. And I think like players like that, even though like maybe strong defensive midfielders aren't the most exciting players, but when you watch, you know, like him take down someone from Croatia or Argentina or whatever, like you'd be like, oh, it's that guy, and he's just taking down this superstar. He's kind of a stud, and given kind of the market he plays for in Leicester and his age, now he's 21 years old, I think he's another guy who's kind of on the rise and could be moving to a bigger club if he puts in a really strong performance.
I think that's a solid pick. My last player that I chose is not young, and that's Keisuke Honda for Japan. And I picked him because he's 31. He just switched from AC Milan to Pachuca last year. In his first season for Pachuca, he scored 12 goals, had 5 assists. He is loved in Italy. He's loved at AC Milan. He's a dead ball specialist. And I just think that because most of us in America kind of stick to the EPL and sometimes the Bundesliga, we don't realize that, or we're not as familiar with players who based in Italy or even the Spanish league for that matter, if they're not on Barcelona or Real Madrid. But Keisuke Honda is a boss, and Japan has, I mean, they don't have a chance in hell, but they have some players that I will be really excited to watch, and Keisuke Honda is one of them, especially if he can just kind of like, I don't know, drill in a free kick from the top of the box, you know. Plus he plays in Liga MX, and God bless Liga MX.
Amen.
Great. So that's all for me. Do you have any more players that you want to highlight?
No, like singletons. Probably want to talk about some folks and teams as we go through. Yeah.
Totally.
But yeah.
So let's talk dark horses / what I'm calling disruptors, because like we said earlier, you know, a dark horse has to go far in the tournament, and that very, very, very rarely happens in the World Cup. But I think every World Cup, we sort of look at groups and say, this is an easy group, this is a hard group, this is an easy group. But it never quite works out that way, you know, just ask Spain last time. And I think there are certain teams that are being overlooked. So I think I would like to start off by saying Group B, which is Portugal, Spain, Morocco, and Iran. I think Morocco are better than people are giving them credit for. Mm-hmm. I think it's just the strength of Portugal and Spain. But, you know, the World Cup is not about raw talent. It's about being able to impose a fluid, workable system on a bunch of people that, you know, for the other 3.5 years are playing in other systems, you know, better suited to their individual skills. So anybody really has a shot, especially in the group stages. Or really only in the group stages, and I think Morocco could surprise us. I think they could get a win over Portugal. And even Spain, why not?
Yeah, I think that's a good call. I think that Portugal is probably not as strong as some people think. I think the Total Soccer Show, one of their previews, made a good point that kind of people are really high on Portugal after the Euros, but maybe it you know, like they didn't actually have the strongest performance in the Euros. They just played a good tournament, kind of got a lot of close results, that kind of thing. So that's definitely a, I think, a group, as you pointed out, that's up for grabs. But that said, you know, it is still Portugal, and it's easy to like find like the one like flaw and be like, aha, you know, like this team may be overrated, but that doesn't mean that they're not really great. So that'd be a good group to watch for that reason.
I mean, four of the seven people I picked for seven players to watch on bad teams are from Morocco or Iran. So Group B is definitely a group that, even if you think it's all done and dusted, you should be watching, because there's a ton of talent in that group that don't live or aren't from Portugal or Spain.
So Group D is an interesting group.
Yeah.
And I'm going to talk about it. So Argentina, Iceland, Croatia, and Nigeria. Yeah, like, how rank those teams? What do you think are the...
I mean, you have to go...
How would you imagine that group to finish?
Yeah, I mean, you have to go Argentina 1. Mm-hmm. I think Croatia is better than Iceland on pure talent. I think, you know, I think everybody wants to root for Iceland. I think Iceland has a great system. I don't think they're a better team than Croatia or Nigeria.
Yeah.
I would say Argentina, Croatia, Nigeria, Iceland. But how, I don't know. I think that's probably how most people would do it. I don't know. What about you?
Yeah, I think that's sort of like the chalk way of doing it. But I think the fact that just listening to you kind of hem and haw, it's a weird group because, you know, I feel like both, in a sense, Croatia and Nigeria are strong dark horse kind of candidates, mm-hmm. where they both have like really top level talent in some ways, or Croatia especially does. And like Luka Modric and Rakitic and all these kind of people who are like really, really great players. It's, you're like, wow, that this is a team that, you know, could go far in the tournament. And would, I think, surprise some people maybe who are less familiar with those players, that kind of thing. And probably just because there are, I don't know, Croatia, I guess, it doesn't have the long established history of other countries in the World Cup. I think they were only admitted into FIFA in like the 90s or something like that. I think something, well, maybe I'm getting that wrong. Yeah, they were formed in 1990. So, you know, they kind of have less of that pedigree, so to speak, but they have such a strong core of talent right now.
Yeah, and I think this is like a group where, listening to people talk about it, you can just tell how much people want to root for Iceland and Nigeria, right? Like, nobody wants to admit that those teams might be out of it.
Do you think, I mean, Nigeria, it's interesting. I mean, I think you know, like the kind of like attacking talent on Nigeria is interesting. Iheanacho mm-hmm. and Iwobi, both of whom are sort of like, I think, maybe haven't quite lived up to potential, mm-hmm. but are still very young. So it's also kind of an interesting, in the sense that, like, I think people always want, I think just by his nature being on Arsenal, people always want Iwobi to be better than he is, because that's kind of like how every player on Arsenal has to be. Like, they won't sign him unless you're in some of it, and like could be cast as a disappointment. And so it's kind of an opportunity, I think, too, for those kind of players to play where they're the man on the team. Mm-hmm. And I think that, as dumb as it sounds in my own sort of like sports playing career, sometimes when you shift from the team that you're on to shifting onto, like, you know, like, to being a player on where you're the one kind of like superstar, in a sense. That's not true about Nigeria, but you're like the main, you know, scoring threat, or one of the main scoring threats, or one of the big players in the team. Like, you have to step up in a different way than you can when you can rely on other people on your team to score goals and get in the box, that kind of thing. So they're kind of an interesting team for that reason too, where those kind of players can step up, and would be really interesting to see if someone like Iwobi really embraces the kind of spotlight.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine that the weight of the Arsenal shirt was quite heavy this year, and that to play for your national team might come as a relief after sort of the ups and downs. But yeah, definitely, Nigeria looks great. Victor Moses is still only 27. For some reason, I had it in my head that he is older than that. But a lot of talent on Nigeria. What's another dark horse slash disruptor that you have?
Well, I mean, so... we talked about Nigeria, but yeah, Croatia is my main one. I think in terms of could go surprisingly far in the tournament. And I just wanted to point out real quick that or I wanted to ask you, of the 20 people listed on the Croatian roster, how many of them have a last name that ends with the letter C?
How many? You said of the 28?
Of the 20 on the Wikipedia roster.
20.
It's 15 out of 20, so 70%.
That's good.
Well, I mean, like my dark horse, I mean, I sort of said it already, talked a lot about it already, but Senegal, I think, is totally. Dark horse. What I want to repeat myself, what's another one of your dark horses?
Well, just real quick, this group that Senegal is in Poland, Senegal, obviously, Colombia, and Japan. So
it's a really open group, it seems to me. So
yeah, totally.
That's kind of one of the things that, like, you know, one of those teams could really could advance far just on the ease of potentially getting out of that group.
Yeah, absolutely. My last sort of disruptor dark horse pick, and I don't know if this is so much about them as it is about just the expectations of the other teams in Group G, which is Belgium, Panama, Tunisia, and England. I'm just gonna say Panama. Basically because England and Belgium are always just like such a mess, like that, like the weight of the shirt, but also this like constant narrative of not living up to expectations for the Belgian team. Roberto Martinez is not a great manager. When Belgium is on, they're so on, but you know, I can see both England and Belgium finding a way to like mess it up, and Panama just coming out CONCACAFing, everybody buying into the same system, like everybody understands the game plan, and you know, not to overuse this word, but really does disrupt play, like doesn't, like games not going according to England's plans or Belgium's plans. But saying that, I'm sure they won't get a single point out of the group, but I just see CONCACAF as being, you know, gritty, determined, and on the same page, and that kind of play is oftentimes rewarded in a World Cup.
So thinking along those lines, which of these groups, if one of the two favorites doesn't make it out of the group, is like the biggest disaster for those two favorites?
When you put it that way, I think Group G, right? Because those are the sort of two strongest favorites that are in the same group, like England and Belgium. Where what are you gonna say?
No, go ahead. I was saying that's definitely true. They're really strong favorites, but also I feel like the sort of like generation, quote unquote, kind of side of it that goes into Belgium and England squads this year,
yeah,
I think puts an extra weight. You know, both those teams have a sense of like, we finally, you know, like,
yeah,
we've got this golden generation kind of thing. And that's overused, yeah, but you get that, like, England finally has all these young players playing in a system and a savvy manager that's going to play a system and not just the superstars. And Belgium has this golden generation of all kinds of top amazing talent. And if either of those faltered, it feels like a waste of the right moment.
Yeah, that's, yeah, like which teams would have the least amount of like an excuse, like which, like it's like, so if Mexico doesn't make it out of the group, like Mexico, Sweden, South Korea, and Germany, I don't think that would be a travesty for anyone not Germany to not advance. Yeah, and I would also say, like, Portugal and Spain, they, like, if they don't advance out of Morocco and Iran, I know that, like, I'm going to enjoy watching both Morocco and Iran. Like, that would be a disaster, especially because Spain didn't make it out of the groups the last time.
Yeah, that is true. If Spain, yeah, has another just absolute disaster performance. But it seems, I don't know, maybe it's me underestimating, like, how important the Spanish national team is, but it just seems like, I don't know. It doesn't seem like, I don't hear about it as much as kind of like a national shame. Uh-huh. Maybe it's just because it's a different language where we hear about like the sort of England shame all the time, just from,
yeah,
as we listen to English commentators and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, even the Spanish language commentary is all like Univision. And so like I'm listening to commentary about Mexico. And so if I were living in Spain or living somewhere close by, I'm sure I would hear more about the Spanish national team, because I think their fall was much more precipitous, you know, after being so successful for so many years, to not come out of the groups was astonishing. I want to do some rapid fire questions, unless you have something else that you were working on today that you want to talk about.
No, fire at me rapidly.
Great. So this is from another Twitter user, but I already closed out Twitter. So, and he asked us just to talk about some topics in general. We already sort of talked about Spain's redemption briefly there. Maybe we won't get into it. I don't really feel like we need to. Brazil's talent versus France's talent is just a topic that he wanted us to get into real quick. Max, do you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, both of them just have a, I think it gets to the point of absurdity when you're just like, you know, you're just like, oh, and that person. Yeah. And like, for example, during the American and the American France friendly, whenever there'd be a sub, you're just like, oh God, thank God they're taking off this player, you know? But then the sub that they're bringing on is just like, oh God, now they're bringing on that player.
Yeah.
It's just absurd. And so I think it's kind of one where it's just, when you're at that level, it seems like, you know, it's just like a all-star game where it doesn't quite, it becomes absurd, and it becomes so absurd that it doesn't even make sense to compare one to the other in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, is between Brazil and France, do you have a favorite, or do you have someone that you would be, if it were the final, do you know who you'd be rooting for?
I don't know, man. Do you? Yeah.
I guess I'd have to say France, but I mean, I would something very strongly about it. I guess it's just because of the time I spent in Lyon, but I would just be watching for the spectacle. I think I just have this thing against Brazil because they've been so good for so long, but so has France. So,
yeah, I wonder. This is a dumb thing that I've been thinking about, but with Zidane resigning from Real Madrid, mm-hmm. I wonder if that was in a move to take over France. Maybe lots of commentators have said this.
Yeah, I think like the only way he'll ever have redemption for the headbutt is if he wins the World Cup as manager with France, perhaps. But
that's kind of what I'm thinking, exactly.
Yeah, I love that narrative. I think sometimes I have a problem with the French national team just because of, well, I don't like Laurent Blanc. I don't like the fact that when he was managing France, he banned halal meals from the cafeteria. I don't like the fact that they themselves went through this huge national anthem singing controversy, and the team often gets a bunch of like racial abuse hurled at them, and so I want the players to do well in spite of their fan base, so to speak. If anybody wants to know more about that, you should watch a documentary on Netflix called Les Bleus. But maybe the less said about that, the better. It's fascinating. Check it out. Next topic that this our forgotten Twitter user asked us is, what can Belgium do with their golden generation? We talked about that briefly. I guess just not fuck it up is like, I guess, what everyone is saying.
Yeah, play some defense. don't do the Martinez. I mean, that's you know, is an interesting kind of subtext, because sort of Martinez has a reputation for being able to have a team that orchestrates incredible goals, but then ships a ton of goals as well. so if Belgium is able to kind of capitalize on that generation and just play a decent enough defense or whatever, that then they. Then I think they're doing what they need to do to capitalize on their golden generation. I mean, it just seems like, how can you not, you know, if you somehow don't have a way to make, you know, Kevin De Bruyne and Romelu Lukaku and other folks like play together, it's like,
Eden Hazard,
yeah. To a lesser extent, Fellaini, or, you know, it's like
Lauren Simon.
Yeah. It's I don't know. Like it's an interesting story, and it's kind of a cool story, just given the fact that they have this incredible amount of talent for a really small country. But, I feel like there's no like key to that besides just like let them do what they're good at.
Yeah. Well, I guess never mind. I don't want to like get out of my depth here and talk about tactics, so I won't. But the next question or topic is, Germany hasn't looked good in the run-up, so will they have what it takes to repeat? Well, I think, you know, raw material-wise, yes. And I think organizationally, yes. I think that, yeah, if they haven't looked good in the run-up, I think it's just one of those teams, you can't count them out, obviously. Like what we said earlier, they're really good at this. And it feels like they've always been really good at this, so I think they absolutely have what it takes to repeat. That's not an endorsement, but I think they'll be fine. What I guess the more interesting question is, what is success and what is failure for Germany? I think semifinals.
semifinals a success? Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's exactly right. Like, if they don't, you know, because I think if you get to semifinals, you get to the point where it's like, well, if one other thing went our way, we could have been in the finals, we could have won. And I think that's kind of how far Germany has to advance for it to be, like, acceptable.
Yes, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, anything to add about Germany?
No, they're really good. They're also in that just ludicrous zone.
Yeah. All right, and the last topic is anything about Messi? And I guess what I would say is that, you know, the Messi v. Ronaldo life that we've all been living for the last 12 years or so hasn't really been completed because neither have won a World Cup. And I think that will decide the argument. And I think most of mankind would like Messi to win because he's just more likable.
Would decide the argument, but can you feasibly see either of them, like, as a contender for that, this World Cup? Like, it doesn't seem likely.
I think Argentina.
You think so?
Yeah, I just think because of the players, I think they have to be considered contenders. But Argentina's interesting because for them, failure happens every cycle that they don't win it, even though they don't really have a legit claim to the trophy.
So let me ask you that then. Mm-hmm. The Germany question, but for Argentina. How far does Argentina have to get for it to be a success?
They have to win it. I think different countries have different expectations, and I think Argentina is one of those countries that, for them, not winning the whole thing is a failure.
And that's because they have a once-in-a-lifetime player?
Yeah, I think it's because they have a once-in-a-lifetime player, except that they always seem to have once-in-a-lifetime players, right? Like, before Messi, it's Maradona. And so I think just given how football crazy that country is and given the history that they have, that it's either winning it or not. And that sucks because then they can't build a sound structure if you're constantly hiring and firing people.
Yeah.
Like England success quarterfinals.
Interesting. Okay. That's an interesting way to think about this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like England success, quarterfinals. I think that's right.
Yeah. Like, everyone goes home more or less okay with themselves. Mexico, quinto partido. What's success for Belgium? I don't know. I think semifinals would make everybody happy and make them feel like they hadn't wasted a generation.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm so low on Argentina.
That's okay. I don't know why I'm saying that's okay. I'm not Argentinian, nor do I really care.
Yeah. So how many teams is it the case where it's a failure if they don't win?
I would say Brazil, Argentina.
Well, now I was going to ask you another just random thought-generating question. Who do you think are the most likable players in this World Cup?
I think Carlos Vela is really likable.
Yeah, I think so too.
I love listening to his interviews. He's just a beautiful, funny man. I don't think that the English team has a single likable human being on it.
A really good question. Yeah. Who is the most likable Englishman?
Yeah, and I'm not just saying, like, I think they're all fine. I don't think none of them, like, offend me.
No, but I mean, like, yeah, but who is the most likable one?
Who is there a single English player that you would like to hang out with?
Oof.
They're not exactly dripping in personality.
Well, some of them are personality, but some of them, you know, like, I mean, Dele Alli and, you know, maybe like Raheem Sterling or Marcus Rashford. But, like, none of them are, like, I don't know, quite have the fun fact. Maybe Dele Alli, but he has some controversy attached to him all the time, too.
Yeah, looking at the English roster, I don't want to hang out with any of these dudes.
Who is the guy on England that you least want to hang out with besides Jamie Vardy?
The name was already locked and loaded.
Yeah.
I think the person I least would want to hang out with is, Gary Cahill just seems like the most boring man in the world. I don't know why. I guess that's about it. They all seem fairly boring. Harry Maguire seems boring. John Stone seems boring. I don't know. Maybe I should follow all these guys on Insta so I can get a better reading.
Yeah.
I mean, who's the most likable player in this World Cup for you?
I think Alex Iwobi is pretty likable. He always seems funny when you listen to his kind of Arsenal interviews, that sort of thing. I do agree Salah is super likable. Pre-blackface, Antoine Griezmann.
Oof.
Who is the most likable person on France?
I don't know. I guess, like, for me, I'd really want to hang out
Is there even a universe where you could consider hanging out with Paul Pogba?
I mean, he doesn't drink, so I think that would be nice. It seems like that's about the only thing we want to do, but I also would love to hang out with Nabil Fekir. Plays for Lyon. Great talent. I love Olivier Giroud. He gave a definition of art once that I thought was incredible, where he was doing this. He was like doing this interview for this French television network, and the woman asked, he goes, "Hey, like, how would you describe what art is?" And he was sort of like saying, like, "Art is anything that elevates the senses past the explicable."
What?
And I was like, "Oh, like Olivier Giroud, you're incredible."
Man, I don't think Giroud is particularly likable, just because I don't trust handsome people besides Carlos Vela.
Yeah, fair. But I guess maybe I'm just in love with Olivier Giroud. That's the problem.
Yeah.
If you want to get in touch with us, softtattoomillionaires@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at softtattoofc. Thank you so much for listening. I cannot wait to be one of the 3.2 billion people watching this World Cup.
Have a good night. And also, do you think that Pepe's actually probably really nice? He's just one of those guys who's a dick on the field, but then you're like, oh, he like invites you over for a barbecue.
He's like at the bakery buying you a cookie that you might like. He's like, oh, never mind. No, I don't think he is. Okay.